Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studio here in Johnston proper. I came in here today, there was a dead mouse.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you were listening to the show last week. So, in fact, we primarily talked about it after the podcast. But, like, we were trying to put a show on, and there's this mouse that's just, like, you know, doing the freaky dicky around the room, you know?
This is a little fella.
Wait, can we say the freaky dicky on KTIA?
It's already done.
Okay, there it is. So anyways, so he's running around the room, right? And Boova was supposed to stop him, and he does a terrible job.
Yeah, I was awful.
He's the world's worst mouse ghoulie.
Yep.
And so the mouse gets out. We can't find him, so we let him go. I come into the studio this week to try to get the show set up, and I can smell it. There's some sort of smell in here.
It's a funk.
And I thought, man, that's rough, whatever that is. That's not good. And so I started sniffing around. I couldn't find it. So I kept trying to type away and get my thing set up. And I peeked around this monitor that I'm sitting at here. And there's a Tupperware container where we'd had some no-bake cookies.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, they were delicious. So, and it sounds like the mouse may have thought the same. Because I look in there, and sure enough, he's crawled in there, eaten the remnants of the no-bake cookies, and then apparently couldn't get his fat butt out after he ate all the cookie crumbs. Ugh. And then he pooped a lot. And then he died in there.
Ooh.
That was pretty much his week. I hope that yours was better.
No doubt.
Yeah, but it was.
I'm concerned that it's not because you've decided to join us here on Live from the Path. Thank you very much for joining us. Here's what we got on the show tonight. So here's the big thing on the docket. And if you're sitting at home and you're on the chat, you can participate in this. My question is, what are your big questions? What are your big faith questions? I know I have some. Like, I have a few that kind of pop up for me, I don't know, once every week, maybe once every month, maybe it's once every few months. And they're like, they're big questions. And maybe I don't ask them because maybe I'm a little embarrassed to ask them. I'm like, well, you know, what do people think about me asking this question? I'm one of the pastors. I feel like I should know better. you know, or I'm afraid, what does that say about my faith because I even have this question? But I don't know. This is the place to do it.
Yeah.
If you're not going to, I mean, what good are big questions if you don't ever ask them? And it's not like God's afraid of your question. That's foolish. So anyway, if you have one, let's do that tonight. If you have, what are your big questions? And maybe we'll take a stab at them. And maybe we got them too, or maybe we don't. And we'll see how that goes. So we're going to touch on that. We're also going to do a round of America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular versus Solomon. Here's the basic nature of this game. I'm going to give you a proverb, a bit of wisdom, and you need to tell me whether it is a worldly proverb or what is a biblical proverb. So secular, from the world, Solomon, biblical. And by Solomon, I mean it's either in Proverbs or Ecclesiastes. That's your root. And if it is a secular proverb, you got to tell me the country of origin. And the whole point here is, like, where are we getting our wisdom, right? Can we tell the difference between what is like a worldly bit of wisdom and what is a biblical bit of wisdom and how we're living our life? So that's secular versus Solomon. We're going to get to that. We also have some advice on Dear Alive from the Path. I can't remember. Anybody have Pope style? I might have Pope style. Nobody?
I had a sweet metaphor about eating crumbs, getting stuck in a bowl, but I feel like it's been ruined. No, overdone.
It's overplayed. okay, I might have some Pope style advice. We'll see if we get to that. Boova has a sweet anecdote about giving gas and a lady at the gas station, so we'll get to that. Before we get any further, just a big shout out to our two sponsors. We have Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer team. Go to eisenlauerteam.com if you're looking to buy or sell a home. Hey, actually, I was looking to buy a home recently, and I contacted Bob, and I'm kind of difficult to deal with, not necessarily my personality,
yeah.
But like when I can do things, like I'm not available at reasonable hours. And Bob was awesome. And John, his brother John, was also great. And like they made some accommodations for my wife and I to go out and take a look at some things, ask a bunch of questions. We tried something that we were pretty sure wasn't going to work, but he's like, it's worth a go. And so he submitted some stuff for us. It was, as always, what I told you about Bob Eisenlauer is that he's awesome to work with. And I reemphasize that now, having dealt with him within the last week or two. So if you're looking to buy or sell a home, I honestly don't know a better guy to deal with. His whole crew is just great. So that's EisenlauerTeam.com, and give Bob a call. Even if you don't need to buy or sell a home, if you just like Life in the Path and say, hey, Bob, I just want to let you know Thanks for sponsoring Life in the Path. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital right here in Johnston. For all your pet care needs, go to westfieldvethospital.com. You can set up appointments online. I like that because I don't like dealing with people. And I can set up an appointment, bring my dog or cat in. I've had my dog there recently. They did a great job. We felt very comfortable. The price was fair. They do great work. They care about you. They care about your pet. And yeah, they're just great folks to deal with. So go to westfieldvethospital.com or give them a call and I don't know, get your pet in there. You know you're not taking care of your pet. The economy was down 5 years ago and you cut services and things have kind of rebounded and you never re-put the pet thing back in the budget.
That's right. You got cable now, don't you? Yeah. Didn't stay away for long.
You upgraded the satellite package. You started buying the more expensive meats at least twice a week or so. The dog is still sitting over there, hasn't had his teeth brushed in 2 years. It's time to join the club, take him to Westfield Vet Hospital.
I imagine our mouse would have done a lot better this week had it gone there instead of in the bowl.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, no, that's very likely. Okay, so here's the deal. Let's fire up. Let's do Secular Solomon.
Okay.
Let's start with Secular Solomon.
Yeah, buddy.
Okay. I like to get prepared because this is a big deal. This is a big deal. Here you go.
And now, for America's fastest growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
All right, just a reminder of the premise. I'm going to give you a bit of wisdom. You need to tell me whether it's a biblical bit of wisdom or whether it is a secular bit of wisdom. And if it's secular, I want the country of origin. Is everybody clear on the rules?
Yes.
All right. If you're playing along in our home game, you can go ahead and type that stuff into the chat just so I know that you're with us and you can keep score at home. Here we go. Secular or Solomon? One pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. Secular or Solomon? Ben Michaels.
I would have to say I'm going to go Solomon, racking my vast knowledge of Proverbs, and I don't recognize it, but I'm going to say Solomon. It sounds familiar.
Okay, hold on, just for a heads up. Ben has answered, I don't believe it's in Proverbs based on my memory, but I'm going to go with Proverbs.
I mean,
just for a heads up on how this game's going to go.
I'll buy that. I mean, I don't know.
A non-committal and very pseudo-humble Proverbs guest by Ben Michaels.
minus 3 points for hesitation. Gosh.
Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
Mike.
That's a secular and Tulane.
That's a college, not a country.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Don't tell them that.
Hey, hold on. Villanova.
A constant disappointment.
Venezuela, sorry.
Venezuela. John Buva.
I'm going to go Solomon. I'm going to go Proverbs 21.
All right. One pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. That is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 13:7.
Well, that's unfortunate for me.
Yeah. Yep, that was a rough go. Here we go. Secular or Solomon. Every cloud has a silver lining. Every cloud has a silver lining. Secular or Solomon. Dave Herrick.
Secular. Let's go with Italy.
Italy, Mike.
Secular, Botswana.
Botswana. John Buva.
Secular, Greece.
Yeah, he does that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ben Michael, secular, Solomon.
Secular, America.
Every cloud has America. A silver lining. America. It is indeed secular, England.
Ooh.
England, an English proverb.
America is a pretty good guess.
Directly here. Next to Greece.
English speaking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that was pretty.
They speak the same language.
It's pretty close there.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
In the dictionary?
Right.
All right, okay. Secular or Solomon, it is not a secret if it is known by three people. It is not a secret if it is known by three people. Secular or Solomon, Mike?
I'm going to live my life by that. That's a secular, and let's go with, I'm not good with countries, Ben. Ireland.
Ireland. John Buva.
Secular, China.
Never trust a Chinaman. Ben Michaels.
Secular, let's go Germany.
Germany, they started two wars. Dave Herrick.
Secular and Switzerland.
Switzerland. It is not a secret if it is known by three people. It is indeed secular. Ireland.
Oh, Ireland. Wow. No.
Hey. All right, 3 points.
Right strike on, of huh? The band, boys.
Well done, sir.
Wow.
That still doesn't make up for Toulouse.
Secular Solomon, I'll give you a bit of wisdom. You need to tell me whether it is a secular bit of wisdom or one biblical or is a Solomon. Here we go. Cease to hear instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. Cease to hear instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. Secular or Solomon. John Buva.
I'm going to go Solomon. I'm going to go Proverbs 6.
Proverbs 6. Ben Michaels.
I'd say Solomon. Proverbs, but I'd somewhere in the single digits.
Single digits. Dave Herrick.
That's Solomon.
Solomon, Mike.
Oh, man. I was going to guess the singular. Solomon, I guess.
Cease to hear instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 19.
Yeah, I totally nailed it.
Your bombastic insistence that it's in single digits or a six is a shame upon your head.
Hey, man. We were told that we were supposed to start doing chapter designations, and I'm doing it.
And you stink at it.
I stink at it, but I'm still owning it.
Okay, fair enough. Secular or Solomon, coffee should be black as hell, strong as death, and sweet as love. Coffee should be black as hell, strong as death, and sweet as love. Secular or Solomon? Ben Michaels.
I'm going to say secular in America.
It happens in America. Dave America. Herrick.
Secular, I also think America.
Okay, Mike.
No, that's English. Secular English.
Coffee should be black as hell, strong as death, and sweet as love. John Buva.
I'm going to go secular, and I'm going to go Ghana.
Ghana.
Yeah, Ghana.
Ghana?
Just throwing darts at a dartboard.
It's G.K. Chesterton. That's who said it.
All right.
So is that British or America?
Again, coffee should be black as hell, strong as death, and sweet as love. Secular, Turkey. Turkey.
Dang.
You elitist white folk. Oh, no, that had to be America. We say clever things.
America.
Strong as death, black as hell. That's us. Tie up your boots, boys. We got a proverb.
Sounds like Ted Turner.
Yeah, I said that.
Secular or Solomon, it is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory. It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory. Secular or Solomon? Dave Herrick.
That's Solomon.
Mike.
Yeah, that's got some Solomon all over it.
John Buva.
Solomon, Proverbs 12.
You've been persuaded by their confidence, and it may be a mistake. Ben Michaels.
May be.
Solomon.
All in for Solomon.
My son, eat honey, for it is good, and the drippings of the honeycomb are sweet to your taste. Wait, that's not the right one.
That's the next one.
No. It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory. That is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 25:27.
What was your chapter guess, that one?
I said 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Honey item number two. My son, eat honey, for it is good, and the drippings of the honeycomb are sweet to your taste. My food.
Yeah, Solomon, Ben. No, wait a minute. You're trying to fool me. Secular Belize.
Secular Belize, John Buva.
Man, my son is really throwing me off because that's totally Solomon.
Yeah. He's coined the phrase my son.
I know, but just whatever. Leave me alone. All right. I'm going with Solomon. Proverbs 9.
Proverbs 9. Ben Michaels.
Solomon.
Solomon.
Solomon as well.
Okay. My son, eat honey, for it is good. And the drippings of the honeycomb are sweet to your taste. It is indeed Solomon. Proverbs 24. That is a chapter before he said, it is not good to eat much honey. Solomon is a conflicted man.
Hey, he's just talking about the amount of honey on the
side. He loves God, and then he marries 1,000 ladies. All
right. So here's the score so far, mid-game. Ready? Ben Michaels, you've got 4. I've got 4. Mike is in the lead with 5. And Bova, 4.
Yeah.
That's right.
Pretty close race. Here we go.
You should also punish Buva for incorrectly guessing the chapters.
Hey, man, I'm just giving it a shot.
Take a couple of them. Here we go. Secular versus Solomon. Whoever sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence.
Wow.
Whoever sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. Secular or Solomon, John Buva.
Solomon, Proverbs 15.
Ben Michaels.
Solomon.
Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
Mike.
Listen to me. If that's Solomon, I'm going to need someone to speak into my life and tell me how I can apply that to me. Because I feel like I'm not using that phrase to its full extent.
Okay. Oh, does that mean you're in for Solomon?
What's your answer?
Solomon.
Whoever sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. That is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 26:6. All right, parse it, boys. You're coming parse this in your across this in your Bible reading. What are you supposed to do with this verse?
To be fair, I already bailed on it, so I'm going to need you guys to...
No, that's true.
Chime in.
Whoever sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence.
It's a foolish thing to do. Don't
send a message by a fool. If you know the man's a fool, don't use the message.
Why do you drink violence?
Yeah, why do you drink violence? I mean, cutting off
because
one's own feet...
Because you're drinking violence upon yourself from the person you're sending the message to.
Is that the automatic fix to every problem? Violence?
No, he's not... Solomon's not saying that. No, he's not advocating his violence. What he's saying is that if you send a fool to represent yourself, you're just going to end up destroying that relationship.
Who violences a footless man? I mean, that's one. That's one stone cold dude right there. All right. So he took the long way around of saying, "Look, don't trust a fool." That's it.
Yeah, he takes the long way around of saying anything.
Cut off your feet. He'll violence you.
I mean, seriously, like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes is the so is the one. So is the slugger to the one who sends him. It just takes long ways to say stuff, man. I remember that because that was one of our secular Solomons.
That's true. Here we go. Secular versus Solomon. Begin to weave and God will give the thread. Begin to weave and God will give the thread. Secular or Solomon? Ben Michaels.
We're going to go secular. Let's do India.
India. Dave Herrick.
Secular Egypt.
Egypt, Mike.
Solomon does not use the Lord's name that much. I'm going to go with secular and Taiwan.
Yeah. Secular, Turkey.
All right.
I'm hungry.
Begin to weave, and God will give the thread. It is indeed secular, Germany.
Dang,
that's close. That's Turkey.
What? Yeah, no, yeah. That's
what they call modern-day Germany. It's Turkey.
That's definitely the same. That was it. That's the end of the show. Secular, who wins?
Thank you for joining Live from the Path. Catch us every Monday night starting at 10 to 11.
Who wins, Dave Herrick?
All right, here's the score we've got. We have John Bova with 5. We've got Ben over here with 5. Myself with 5. And our winner, reigning champion, Mike Foost.
Even when I don't cheat, I win. This is fantastic.
Hey, man, it's only because you guessed that.
Yeah, here's the deal. I took all the pieces out of Candyland, so only one guy can play at a time. I win every time.
Well
done. The kids don't know what to do with themselves. I try to let them use their fingers as game pieces, but they get distracted, and they always put themselves back at the start.
All right, that was Secular versus Solomon. Hey, if you enjoyed that game or you hated it and want to mock it, you can go to lifefromthepath.org. We got a list of we got a game section with different variances of Secular versus Solomon. And there's also a couple other games out there, like what did we hear on Christian radio to raise money? That's a good one. And also, it's the end of the world as we know it. Do you know your end times predictions that have been made? And that's all there at their website, lifefromthepath.org. All right, boys.
Hey, man, real quick.
Yes.
I feel like we're getting better at this game.
Yeah, like, seriously. Here's the deal. It's not as fun when people don't know the answers. You know what I'm saying? It's fun when a guy does not know, and then we can make fun of him for a little while. And that did not happen very often there.
Yeah. 2 years ago, we had Dan going secular Epcot Center. Yeah. And now we have all of us answering all of the questions correctly.
Mike guessed Tulane and Villanova.
Yeah, that's Mike. Yeah. You just learned to deal with that.
All right, it's not funny to laugh at my life as it stands.
He won, Boova.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's Mike. He won with that attitude.
He won off the Irish. Does that count?
Hey, just real quick, we got to thank you guys. If any of you got a chance to come out to the show that we had out at Zeke's last Tuesday, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was really a good time. I promise you, there is bands out there that will blow you away with their talent and their heart for Christ, and you're missing them. They're missing them by doing the two-cheek sit-down and not ever coming out of the house and checking out some live music.
Right.
So I'd really like to encourage you that if you don't make any type of habit of going out and checking out some bands that are hot-footing around the country for the Lord and really spreading some gospel through some tunes, you're really missing out. And so just plan on attending one of the Live from the Past shows coming up.
Yeah, we'll have a list probably within the next couple of weeks out on the website and of stuff that we've got coming up both at Zeke's and potentially elsewhere. And should be a lot of fun. That was a great time. We'll have some cuts, I think, from some of the bands that were out there. Hopefully, again within the next couple of weeks. And it's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
It is
awesome. All right, boys. Here's the deal. What are your big questions? What are your big questions? The ones where they pop into your mind and they're faith related. Jesus, God, whatever. Things that you wonder. Things that you ponder. Things that scare you. That you're thinking about. Things that maybe you're too embarrassed to ask. But it's big. It's a big thing. What are your big questions?
Two things.
Okay.
That have continuously popped up in my faith for the last couple of years, even more so when I felt like I was getting stronger in my faith. The first question is, do I really believe in God? And I feel like a total schmuck every time I ask that question. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting around, and whether it be in church, whether it be in one of my Bible studies, whether it be in accountability, whether it be in worship or anything like that, I'm just sitting there, and I really just start completely discrediting what is being spoken to me. And I'm just like, okay, all right, guys, let's not lie to each other anymore. Do I really believe what I'm hearing? Do I really believe that this God is real, that this God exists? Every time I've been able to go, what? Yes, shut up, leave it alone. So far, But it pains me that I have that pop in my head. And the second one that quickly follows for the most part is, do I really love God? Am I truly in love with God the way that I say I am? Because I know myself and I know my personality well enough to know that I can fake a lot of stuff. I can lie my way through a lot of situations. And I don't like that about myself, but that's what it is. And I can fake that. And I have faked faith before. I have faked faith for years. And I don't want this to be so elaborate that I'm lying to myself. Mm-hmm. And that I'm convincing myself that I have faith when I really don't. Those are the two biggest ones that I tackle. And so far up to this point, I've for the most part been able to answer those very quickly of, well, yes, of course you do have faith. You do believe in God. You believe that this God exists and you have faith in him. And then, yes, you love God. You do love God. This isn't fake. This isn't a joke to you. This isn't for fun or for show. This is real. But it's just, it kills me that those happen.
Do you guys have any similar experiences?
I'd have to say that I do. Like, I almost think that you're maybe not evaluating your relationship correctly if that doesn't creep in every once in a while anyway. It's easier, like, let's say if you put it in a metaphor that God uses, that Jesus uses a lot, is the metaphor of marriage, right? Like, I can relate to that on some extent. There are times, you know, in my marriage that it's not... how can I say this without my wife getting upset at me? but with me continuing to be honest, there are times that it's not like it was when on your second date. You know what I'm saying? There's times when the butterflies aren't quite there as much, when the mortgage is a bit heavy and the kids tore the place up and the dog ran away, and like it just doesn't feel exactly like that.
Yeah.
But there's a base that you know is there, like that doesn't leave, and actually without you even noticing, you act as if that base is there, right? Like you don't have that, let's say that butterfly feeling is not there right now, but your actions are built upon a base as if that the butterfly feeling was there at some point. Yeah. And that there was a relationship built at some point. Like, and so the your outcome and your actions are started in a direction that flow from where that foundation came from. And like without realizing it, you are acting while you're still standing on that, right? Yeah. And I feel like my... usually when that kind of stuff creeps into my head, I have to default back to, you know, my feelings can't generally be trusted anyway.
Yeah.
Especially my feelings of anger, disappointment, impatience, whatever. Like, they're just not trustworthy feelings. But, like, if I can stop for a second and look around me and look where my time has been over the last, you know, couple weeks and the things that are surrounding me, like, I can tell they're all a product of something that I would really have to be phonying pretty hard, you know, to say that, to prove to myself that I don't believe in this. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Either, and maybe Boo was right. Like, you know, maybe I've really convinced myself that this is the deal, and I've lied to myself for so long that I've built a sandcastle to live in. But if that's not the case, then I believe what I say I believe. I just don't have the butterflies at this moment. Just not this moment.
Yeah. And I think I have that same thing from time to time. It'll just be like a fleeting thing and say, you know, are you putting on a show? And generally it's a bit of a guilt thing. It's to God. It's weird because it's like directed to God and said, am I putting on the show? Am I just going through the motions here with you? Which is weird because it's a thought that maybe I don't believe at all, but I'm talking to God in the process. And any time that I've had that experience, I'll tell you this, and we'll see if this is similar to what you've run into. It's never out of a place of evaluation, right? It's never out of a place of actually having weighed the validity of what is true if I didn't believe, right? It is always a momentary thing that says, at this moment, I feel like either I'm not authentic in my love for God, or I am not... maybe I'm not feeling it, and Mike's right. That's not a good indication. What you feel is almost never a good indication of what's true. Mm-hmm. But it's never comes from a place of evaluation. I've never sat down and said, well, you know, am I willing to toss the inerrancy of Scripture because I believe these other things, and then this is just not going to work out. Like, I've never come to that type of conclusion. There's people that walk away from the faith that said, because I believe in XYZ, I simply can't accept the Bible for what it is, and if I can't do that, that's the foundation of the faith, I'm out. Okay, mm-hmm. I actually understand that reasoning. I've never done that. Mm-hmm. Any time that type of thing has popped into my mind, or I've spent any time thinking about it, it's never an evaluative thing. It's just a right at this moment. In fact, last week, I was having this feeling. I really I'll admit that this hasn't really happened to me before, but I had this, I was missing scripture. I was missing it. I had done a lot of, I've been doing a lot of studying because I've been doing a lot of teaching, but I haven't been reading, like for me and God, like for me spending time with God and things that he said. And it was like 4 days ago, I thought, like, I can feel it in my life that I'm missing this. I actually have not had that feeling before. Mm-hmm. But I was really feeling it last week. And it's those types of things where, you know, the things that pop into your head aren't coming from any level of, you know, study, aren't coming from any level of true evaluation. It's just, it's a moment. And the question is how you deal with moments, right? It's not wrong to have those types of moments. You have to, there's just a reaction to them. There's a reason that we are provided a Bible. There's a reason that we are provided witnesses. The reason we are provided a community around us is so that those moments do not otherwise overshadow our lives and become something that they aren't really. We don't give validity to moments that are in and of themselves just points in time of which something occurred, and we have to react to them one way or the other, you know? But yeah, I've certainly had those types of experiences. Some of them have been in low parts of my life where like sin has been there and it's put my mind in a bad place. And then sometimes we're like, none of that was going on, and I just thought, I don't know, things seem to be rocking along. Could it be true that God isn't here? Because I don't see him right now. Well, you know, it's a 2-minute thought, and then it's gone.
Yeah,
that happens with I don't know, that happens with a lot of things in life. I don't know that's even the special to God relationship type of thing. Just thinking, hey, maybe I should work someone else. No,
maybe yeah, no.
You know, maybe I should marry someone else. Maybe, you know, I made the wrong move. What are you gonna do?
I put it in the same category as, like, you know, every once in a while you'll it'll pop in your head, like, what if my mom dies, or what happens if my wife is not here?
Oh man,
you know what I'm saying? Like, has that ever happened to you? Where you're like, and you're like, why am I even thinking about this?
Actually, I thought we were in church on Sunday, and Herrick was preaching because Dan was at Ragbri, and I thought, what if Dan dies? I killed Dan in my mind during the service on Sunday for no reason,
right? And you're like, why am I even thinking about this? And you're like, I would be devastated. I'm servant. Would I cry? I'm not sure. I mean, there'd be other people to comfort. That Dan's a very important to a lot of people, but crap. You know what? I should probably go take communion. It's time.
I've never done the what if someone else dies, but I've done the what if I die thing.
Yeah, what happens when I die?
I kill people off all the time. Just randomly.
Okay, so my brother does not count when it comes to that. I've killed my brother off my mind before, and I've repented for that multiple times.
It's actually not fair if you're like, how great would life be?
Exactly. It's not the same thing when you go, man, what would happen if my brother died versus, man, I think I might kill my brother. Love you, Trey.
I think that's a big question. I think
it's a fair question.
And I think the chat is right. I think it is something that pops into most people's minds at some point or other. Mm-hmm. Herrick, have you had an experience with any of that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of my faith development happened before the days of the internet, so I wasn't able to get into online discussions with people who disagree with me. Instead, I was more or less raised in a church.
Yeah.
But in spite of that, I very much value the opinions and insights from people who did not grow up in the church, who they're aware of some of the messages from the church, but vehemently disagreed with them. Some of them were agnostics, some were atheists. And so as I would be in the church and I'd be exposed to different ideas, I'd also check it through just kind of the filter from other people's perspectives, just so that I could kind of weed out some of the fools and the foolish messages that you get even from within the church.
Yeah.
And I found it very valuable, and something that's actually useful in forming my own faith is just being able to look at it from all kinds of different perspectives on that. So, yeah, I find that doubt actually helps to grow my faith. So I embrace it.
Yeah.
Yeah, my general reaction to me asking that question has been to, you're right, Ben, not from an evaluation standpoint of really breaking down, you know, what's going on in my life, more along the lines of I reinforce myself of why I'm doing it. You know, I'll go through the do I really love God thing, and I'll think to myself, if I didn't, why am I doing this?
This is
foolish. This is really stupid for me to do if I don't love God. Because half the time, if I didn't have a God standing behind me, stuff that I'm doing seems really dumb.
Right.
And it's just like, hey, man, why are you like weirding people out and talking to them all the time about this kind of stuff? You just look dumb. If I don't believe in God, I'm just a creepy guy.
Right. I mean, there's other things to advocate for that have had a much easier connotation to your life's identity than advocating for Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my life would be a lot... Like, from the comfort standpoint, a worldly comfort standpoint, my life would be a lot easier if I thought that this was it, and then I just decided to live my life the way that my flesh wants to, because this is it. You know, the stuff that we're called to abstain from, the stuff what we're called to do, from a worldly flesh standpoint, kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sometimes, like, I'm being 100% honest when I say that. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, I really want to do that. God's like, no. It's like, no, but I really want to do that. It's, no, you're not doing that. If I didn't have God going, no, I'm just some idiot that's going, man, I really want to do that. Well, guess I'm not gonna. And that's it. Yeah. That's all I got. Yeah. Well, this book seems really good read. I think I'm not going to after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. That's a good big question, Boova. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? What are the other big questions?
Well, I think a question that's always popped into my mind is that idea of what if we're wrong? Like, what are the implications? And ultimately, that kind of leads to another question of just what are the stakes that we're playing for? You know, are the stakes really that high?
Yeah.
You know, you read the claims of the Bible and the claims of Jesus, and you go, wow, we're playing for the ultimate stakes. If this is true, then really nothing else matters. Is that true? Like, can that be right? I heard a preacher the other day talk about the trilemma, C.S. Lewis's trilemma, that when you read the claims of Jesus, you have to conclude that he's either a liar, a lunatic, or the Lord. You can't just say, oh, he's a good man and dismiss him.
Yep.
He's either one of those three things. And once you realize that, you realize, man, if Jesus' claims are true, this is the only thing worth living for. And if they're not true, then I'm wasting a lot of time doing this.
Yeah.
And so you reach those crises, I guess, those questions of, oh my gosh, what if we're wrong? But I think so often Christians, we're afraid of that doubt. We're afraid mm-hmm. of doubt. And I think it's important that we realize that doubt is nothing to be afraid of. It's something, it's a growing process that the Spirit uses. He uses those questions, those moments to speak to us. Those moments when God gets to talk to us and say, no, this is true. And really helps us grow. I know the biggest growing points in my faith have been those times when I really wrestled with, why can't I see God? Like, how can God be real if I can't see him and touch him? Like, that's really wrestled with that. And I was able to grow through that. How do I have a relationship with a God I can't see?
Yeah.
Am I really praying to God, or am I just praying to the corner in the room? You know, that wall speck on the wall.
Right. Am I awkwardly standing in a dark room talking to nobody? Because, I mean, that's psychotic.
Exactly. 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 And I think God, the Spirit really uses those moments to grow you. They're not something to be afraid of. They're something to embrace. There's something to search the Scriptures diligently when you have those questions, to go to your Christian friends and challenge them with their questions. You know, we don't live this Christian life in a vacuum. We live in a community of other believers, and we can, and you'll notice that all believers have these questions.
Yeah.
You're not going to be alone. And I think that's something we fear when we have this doubt, like, oh, I'm the only one struggling with this question. No, we all have them. So talk to each other about it. It's important that we talk about this and discuss these questions, because you're going to find that they have the same questions and the same answers.
Well, and that's the thing is we've done a disservice to people who are who don't know God by representing as if we are that distinct from them.
Yeah.
You know, like the same thing. I've met a few of them, right? Like people who don't believe in God, and they have specific reasons and specific doubts, mm-hmm. and like we share those. Mm-hmm. Now, I just did something different with them. Mm-hmm. Like I sought an answer, and I was able, and I was willing to be satisfied. I was willing that God could be the answer to that, where some of them have just cut it off and said, I will accept any answer but God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the thing is I guess, you know, there's no reason to act like those things don't exist. And like we talked about at the beginning, like God is simply not afraid of those questions. And, you know, I love the guy who's like, you know, Lord, help me with my unbelief. But he mm-hmm. did it posturing that, like, I trust that you will. You know, he was able to hold firmly to both and say, I know what's going on in my mind, but I'm believing what you're saying, and I trust that you will help me. Chad's question was, I can understand growing through that, and I know we all doubt, but I thought doubting was a sin.
Mm.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's a no.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's a no.
I don't know how to say that. I don't know. I mean... It's running into a situation, and then your decision process afterwards can walk down a sinful trail. But like, it's faith, man. That's why they call it faith. If there wasn't any opportunity for doubt, faith would not be necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, like a perfect example. When Herrick was talking, I was thinking about this, but I told the girls that we were going to start going through Genesis. Right? I said we're going to read all the way through Genesis. Let's sit down and do it. And so we did chapter one tonight about the creation of the, we got through the first 6 days. And for some reason, like, I felt slightly hypocritical when I got to like day three or four. I'm like, this sounds preposterous. Like, if I'm being honest, this sounds absolutely preposterous. You know what I'm saying? And like, because my daughter looked at me, she goes, so Jesus was there, right? I said, yeah, Jesus was there. She goes, when was Jesus born when he was not born on the earth? And I said, never. She goes, okay. And then she smiles. And I'm like, why is it that easy? I'm like, I don't know. You know, like, I know, but I don't know. And I'm going to be okay with that, you know? And like, sometimes that conversation stops, you know, with people who are agnostic or atheist, you know? They're like, well, God was never born. I'm like, I'm with you. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to explain that. Right. I'm sure there's a magic curtain that he can show me the deal maybe when I meet him. But like, as of right now, I'm just like, the rest of the Bible pretty much says God is the answer to this problem, right? Like, I don't know. I can't tell you the answer. I just know God's the answer. And so, I don't know. Like, I don't think doubt's sinful.
Well, so
am I missing it?
Okay, well, so here's where I think it comes up. There's a couple of things. There's one bad place, and then there's one good place to kind of have this conversation. In Romans 14, the end of it says, but whoever has doubts is condemned if he eats, because the eating is not from faith, but whoever does not proceed from faith is sin. They focused on a broad answer to a very specific issue that Paul is addressing. So, like, that I would say is not a healthy place to kind of have that discussion. However, I think the beginning part of James does kind of touch on something which is rightfully talked through. It says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. So I think that's where that's coming from, with doubt as a sin. And I think I get it. I think I get where that discussion is coming from. But look where the verse is posturing, right? He's saying you're asking in faith with no doubting. It's to the extent where you're approaching God saying, I don't believe you can do this, or I don't believe you will do the things that you said you would do. That's saying that what God said about his character, I'm not sure is accurate. That I think is distinct from the thought where God uses the Bible to basically, I mean, Jesus makes the case for himself. You know what I'm saying? And if we were to accept something, even if creation around us is our only witness, it is still making a case, right? When Paul's talking about that, it says they know because they can see the creation around us. So, like, you know the existence of God, which says, like, God is presenting evidence. He's not above you saying, hey, I'm demonstrating to you that I do exist, which means that there is a natural part of us that wants to say, is this true? Is it not true? So, like, I hesitate to believe that that's the angle which this part of James is covering. I think it's knowing what you should know or taking what God has said and then saying, I don't know if I believe that you will do what you say you will do, or that kind of thing. And maybe that's not a fair distinction, but that's where I'm at with that distinction.
Yeah, quite often in our culture, we're going to approach doubt very differently than they did back then. So when the Bible addresses doubt, he's not talking about, are you wrestling with whether or not God exists? They're looking at more along the lines of, are you actually trusting God? Is God powerful enough? Is God going to get involved type of doubt? They're not usually addressing that issue of does God exist or not, just because it really wasn't a question that they asked. They lived in a world that very much embraced the idea of the supernatural existing, and that forces shaped the world, and that kings were endorsed by whatever gods or deities or whatever it was that was ultimately controlling everything. They looked at that as that hierarchy. So I forget where I was going with that.
Derailed. but I think to kind of bring that point around is in the Enlightenment world and the post Enlightenment world that we live in, we are in an environment that frames that discussion much differently, right?
Right.
It is a sore thumb that you believe in a God wouldn't have been, like, regardless of which God it was, that's not that outstanding in their time.
Right.
It is a much more maybe not controversial, but it's a much different thing. To say, I believe in a creator God of the universe in the environment that we're in. And so a little bit of some of those things are creeping into our lives, simply for the environment that we are being, that we are surrounded by. But, you know, we have the promise that we, although not insulated from it, will persevere through it.
Yeah.
But that's the power of God, right? Because, like, he very much recognizes that's a risk that we run in our circumstances. So, you know, definitely shoot us an email if you feel like we've not represented that James was right. But that I think is what it's getting at.
I was thinking about that when you guys were talking, but like I feel like I do have some doubt within my you know, relationship with God, but it's mostly on my end.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering if, like, I like the persistent widow parable. You know, the story of the persistent widow, right? Because it just, I don't know, it shows God. It shows God's long suffering character. I just really appreciate that He's willing to listen to me and love on me, even if despite what I'm asking.
Yeah.
But like, a lot of the times when I pray, you know, I'll throw things out there and be like, you know, I feel like this is kind of the way for me to go. I'm going to ask you to back this up. If it's for you, and if it's not, then great, you know, move me along, you know? And, I feel a lot of doubt in those times, not that God will, not hold up his end of the bargain, but to be honest, whether I'm asking for things that are in line with what has going, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I have a lot of doubt there. And I think that's probably one of my big questions is that there's a good amount of times where I'm like, am I missing what you're doing here? Am I missing?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I lose confidence in the quiet. You know, when God's loud and God's the body of Christ is loud and people are loud and moving loudly, I'm like, yeah, there's no question for me.
Yeah,
this sounds great. Yeah. But in the quiet, when I'm just going to work and, you know, feeding the dog, and I'm like, there's not a whole lot going on. This can't be on mission. Can I stop? I'm stopping for a candy bar. Should I have given that to somebody in Uganda? I feel like I've done the wrong thing.
I should mail that guy a Snickers.
You know what I'm saying? And like, yeah. some of that is petty. You know, some of that's right. Petty and silly, and I know that. You know, but like, in the long sweep of things, you know, sometimes I feel like I just don't get it, if I'm being honest. Like, I just don't get it. I know what God's heart is. I know where God, you know, I know what Christ did for me. I got no problems in all these areas. But sometimes I feel like I don't get it, and I'm like a guy with 20 toys in the room, and I'm like, I have no idea which one to play with that would make you happy.
Well, right. And actually, I think this comes down to shades of what Ben Michaels was talking about. We're talking about what the consequence to what you believe, right?
Right.
Like if this is true, the very heft of what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. it means everything. And so the question then is like, is there ever a far enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, say like. Yeah, you could ship that county candy bar to Uganda. I mean, is that a petty thing? But like, is it too far for the thing that means everything?
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's something that people who love God struggle with is understanding, especially in the environment that we live in the United States, is like, you know, how could there be a too much? He gave mm-hmm. if Jesus gave everything mm-hmm. as a sacrificial example, like there can't be a too much on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
But I do need to feed the dog. But maybe I shouldn't have got the dog to begin with. Yeah. Now right. I'm tied to it. Is it too much?
That's right. Maybe I can't afford the dog. What? You know what? If I get an apartment and get rid of this house and get extra money, I can't even have the dog. Now what do I do? I got like three dogs.
I already took the dog.
Now I got to get rid of him.
It's a sinful puppy at your house.
You know the problem is like like logically, which is where I tend to base back in. Like my faith sticks in a very. I have a fairly unshakable faith in that area. Like I believe it. I can look around. I know the foundation where it's at. It's the pins and needles where I have a hard time operating. And sometimes, like, I think, well, he can't really care that much whether I get this candy bar or not. But on the other hand, he cared when I told little white lies on behalf of, say, my employer, so they didn't look bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, little lies that are acceptable to everybody else. Like, well, your ticket got lost. That's not true. We got busy, and you weren't a priority. That was the truth, right?
Yeah.
But that's not what the guy at the front counter says, because that's not his job, you know? And, like, I got very convicted of living my life that way. Like, and I thought, I can't do that anymore. And so that's a little thing that 3 years ago I'd have said, you know, it's fine. That's the deal. That's just part of my job. That's what I do, you know? And I'm like, I can't do that anymore. So it's 100% honest now. And so the same thing's true with my money, and the same thing's true with my time. You know, all the things that 3 years ago I said it's not a big deal, and I'm thinking like, you know, this candy bar is no big deal. But on the other hand, maybe it is. You know, right. Maybe it's the turning point, like the I lost your ticket, or you know, it got lost in the mail, or you know what I'm saying? Like all the little things that I used to say that made my life easier. Yeah, the Snickers bar kind of falls in that same category for me.
Right.
Maybe there isn't such a distinction between secular and sacred.
Right. I think one of the dangers that one of the main questions that we wrestle with is, of course, how big is your God? Because so often we worship a God that we made up in our mind, not the God that made mm-hmm. our mind.
Yeah.
You know, and so because we worship a small God, yeah, we fear doubts because doubts really are a threat to the God that we created.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're worshiping the God that created us, then doubts aren't a threat, because the God who created us is truth. No doubts could assault that. And so I think it's important that we're worshiping a God who's big, you know, bigger than me, but also a God who's so big that he cares about me as an individual. He created me as an individual, and then he died for me as an individual. He bothers to learn my name and know about me and care about me and care about the candy bar that I eat or don't eat.
Or don't eat.
Yeah, you know, he cares about each and every bit. And because he died for each and every bit, and I derive my value from that. But I think it's really important that we worship a God who's big, and also a God who's small. You know, a God that cares about me as an individual, but also cares about the entire world and the effects on the entire world. Because then I think our doubts start to go away when we realize I'm doubting a God that I made up in my head. I need to be worshiping a God that made my mind.
How does this help me with my candy bar?
How does it help you with your candy bar?
Hey, man, I can tell you straight up, don't eat the candy bar.
That's a no.
Yeah, right. Just don't eat
the candy bar. At least you're thinking about the candy bar, though. That's different.
We got soda in here.
I don't know
if I could have drinking water and set the difference to the Uganda or the border.
This is more from a just life choice general situation. Don't eat the candy bar.
So I've got a question that's very similar to Mike's here. So this is one of the questions that I struggle with. And I'll kind of introduce it in two parts. The first one's going to be the lightweight one.
Okay.
And it's essentially just I'm looking to God saying, hey, what's your perspective on this? In big decisions, in little decisions, is there something that I'm missing, something really critical I should know, I should be – because I want to be able to evaluate a situation – whatever kind of conversation I'm involved in, I just want to be able to evaluate it from God's perspective and be able to look at it that way. So as I'm holding a candy bar in front of me, I want to know, okay, God, do you think this is wise for me to eat this and gain the energy, or should I not spend the money here and do this some other way? Yep. You know, I want to get his perspective on it, because it could be that, you know, I donate the money to some kind of organization and it never gets to Ghana. I don't know. Or it could just make no difference on the other side.
Or the CEO of that company could buy a candy bar.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so being able to get his perspective on just the people around me as well, and that kind of leads into my second question, which is, God, I don't want just your perspective on the situations around me or even just the people around me. I want to know, God, how do you see me? How do you look at me? When you look at me, what do you think? What comes to your mind when you see me? And that's something that I still struggle with. So I want to get God's perspective both on the world around me, but also on myself. I want to know, how do you see me, God? So.
No, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, because, you know, so often when we approach God, we approach him with either acknowledgments of who he is or repentance of what we've done. And very, 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 and there's a hesitance to talk about who we are as people, as if the, for fear of vanity, for fear of vanity. Like, Lord, I came to go approach God Buva style, right, and say, hey, I want to talk about myself for a while. Lord. Right. Hey, back, I'm going to speak about me.
That is so incredibly wrong, man. Approach God Buva style, really?
You have your own style.
All
for
I'm saying
God?
Is, I don't want to be smited at any point in time. We should stop. Let's talk about me for a second.
Ben Michaels, it's a big God. I'd watch out. So, So I think there's a thought that that we stay away from that, as if God is not interested in us and that we should stay out of the conversation. That God basically wants to hear a submission of platitudes that he provided in the Bible that we're to just regurgitate back to him.
Right.
I'm not sure that's the character that I get from him. Now, I lean on those words a lot because he said them better than I. Right. He's captured them better than I could. And frankly, his perspective is always true, and mine is sometimes. Okay? So yes, I certainly lean on those words to help me understand him better. However, yeah, the thought process that says, if to be in a true relationship with God, you get feedback, right? Like, I know from my spouse how my spouse views me. And it's perfectly legitimate to approach God and say, I want to know because I – you know, we're in this relationship, and not I want to serve you as God, and I want to worship you, but I also do. I have a desire to know, what is this relationship like? How do you see me? I think, that's an interesting question, because I think what it does, it starts to engage us with God, our Creator, as opposed to basically mailing in postcards, mailing in verbal postcards. Hey, checking in, God. Here's what I had happen to me. Or, hey, checking in, God. I miss you because things are great with you.
you're actually engaging with God, and like that is the utmost of that prayer opportunity. But so a lot of times we use that opportunity basically to send him a postcard or do the Facebook billboard that we talked about last week. Yeah. And it just seems like God hasn't shut down that relationship, but we sometimes struggle with what's the right way to approach him, and that's what we end up doing. Mm. All right.
Yeah, I agree. That's heavy.
Okay. Oh, shoot, man. We got to go. Oh, man. You got some Dear Life from the Path?
Yeah, we'll fire one up, and we'll get the answers on the flip side.
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm a young woman hoping to find the one, but I have come to realize that I'm not the normal female. I do not get manicures or go shopping. I hate shopping. When I meet a guy, he likes that I'm me, but if we get too serious, then I'm either too independent, too outspoken, or not girly enough. I don't want to change myself or pretend to be someone I'm not. One minute they like that I'm independent and can fend for myself. The next they don't like that I don't depend on them to pay bills, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it always a double standard? Men like strong women until they are with one. Then they can't handle it. Maybe I'm too much for the men where I live. Is it possible for me to find someone independent?
Actually, we got time to help to answer this one.
Oh.
Do you just live in a small town? I mean, is that what's
going on? Yeah, what is there, a section of the country with a bunch of...
says independent female in Louisiana.
Okay, yeah. A lot of small towns in Louisiana.
Okay.
All right.
So you're agreeing with her. Yes, it's viable that you just live in a town that's not going to put up with you.
No. Okay. So here's what I think. Based upon her premise, I feel like she may think too highly of herself. It is likely that she's... In fact, it's becoming more and more likely that you run into fellas like that who are intimidated by a stronger woman. I'm with you. I get where like that might be the case, so I can sympathize with that. It is likely not every guy, unless as this strong-willed woman, you keep picking out guys so that there is no threat to your... What you obviously feel very proud of is the strong will in your life. And so you don't want to come across the man who you feel like might otherwise desire or act in what would be a traditional male role. And so you avoid those guys because they make you feel awkward. You're used to or desire to be in the position of control over these kind of suspended pansy fellas. And so, I mean, that's who you keep ending up with.
Listen, everybody has a hard time getting along with somebody that's extremely strong-willed. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's true of all relationships, not just opposite-sex relationships, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, everybody works with some guy he's confident and right about everything, and, like, he'll take care of it himself, and he doesn't need your help for nothing. You're like, man, I'm having a hard time getting along with that guy.
No, yeah, that personality trait is right. It's not exclusive to a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
This is not about you all the time, Boova. All right, we're going to give our final bit of advice when we come out of the break. If you're on 99.3 KTA, we have got to let you go. Thanks for hanging out with us. Big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team and Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Like I said, if you're on the podcast, we'll be right back with you. Give us about 30 seconds. You've been listening to Live from the Path. But why do you keep doing that? Is that just your normal state? Is to stand there moving your eyebrows around? Like some kind of mystic Arab?
Yep.
Mystic Arab.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking of the, not Arab, Indian. Like the, who's the guy from the Mike Tyson's Punch-Out?
The tiger.
The great tiger.
The great tiger man.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
He always doing this business.
Yeah,
Indian. And like, that's what Boova's eyebrows remind me of, is that type of
doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Actually, it's Piston Honda that does the eyebrows.
Don't they all do the eyebrows?
Hey,
no.
Man.
No.
No, just piss.
Let's try not to make this about me.
Okay.
Too late.
But I like the way my eyebrows dance.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Boova, what do you do with this strong-willed woman?
Yeah.
So I'm in agreement with you guys. I think that this gal has been looking for the weak dude that does not challenge her independence. That she can latch onto her rather than the other way around, or rather excuse me, then it'd be a mutual relationship. She enjoys the power that she has and therefore looks for the guy who has no power. And that guy is intimidated by the power that she has. Likes the strong concept of a woman, likes the concept of someone who's not dependent on him because he can't be depended on.
Actually, yeah, I suppose that's the basic nature, right? Like if you are approaching a relationship in which you say, I do not want to have to depend on a man, That's going to be a very rough romantic relationship to say, hey, I refuse to be dependent upon you. Then you're actually just, you're hiring a roommate.
Right.
Right.
You know, yeah. Say, I am dependent upon my wife.
Yeah.
And she is dependent upon me.
Right. It shouldn't be one person's dependent on the other. It should be a relationship that's mutually dependent upon each
that's
other.
That's right. When you get married, it's not 80-20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should work together and partner together to be, you know, strong in different roles, but accent off each other to be strong together.
I want to dominate him and otherwise not give myself over to this relationship, and no one wants to be in a relationship with me, and I'm upset.
I don't understand. I'm left to date a bathroom rug.
Now, that's it. Like I said, I'm going to sympathize. I do think, like, you are running out of the type of man who has accepted what I believe are the responsibilities of a man in a relationship. Like, that are running from that, and basically that are looking for some gal to carry him around. I don't know how she's probably running into these fellas who like want to hang out and not do anything all day.
Yeah, who's not to say that she's? I mean, she might be 75% accurate here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
But like the truth of the matter is, like it, like any type of strong, like with generalized confidence comes almost a half wall of me listening to you because I'm pretty much confident I'm right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like. In a relationship, in marriage, you pretty much got to get rid of that wall. It doesn't matter if you're right or not. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to be at least willing to have the conversation and do it as a team. And if you're not willing to even do that because you're too independent, you know, I don't think you have a formula for a successful marriage, even if you do find a guy that's willing to put up with that.
Yeah, so
you're just going to get mad at him 5 years for not 5 years from now for being, you know, incompetent and not fulfilling, not adding unto you. You know, you're basically giving a guy no opportunity to add to your life. And therefore, like, your marriage will be 80-20, and you'll feel like you're pulling the cart all the time, and I give it 5 years for you're tired of doing that.
And so if we have to, actually provide some fruitful advice, here's the two things that I would say. One, don't settle. Don't settle for a loser just because you're running through a bunch of fellas. It doesn't mean that it's not a numbers game. Keep waiting. Right. Keep waiting, keep looking. Second thing would be, make sure that what you're bringing to the relationship is something that the person with the personality that you're looking for would actually want. Right. If it's someone that you want to love you and to be in like an intimate, close relationship with you, and you basically want to dominate them and otherwise not have to give anything up to be part of this relationship, then I think that's where you're running into trouble. So like, make sure that what you are entering into the relationship with is something that would otherwise be attractive for the person that you're looking for.
I don't know. Something about this isn't quite adding up.
Okay.
You're painting her as someone who just wants to dominate every relationship that she's in.
That's what she said.
But that's not really the profile of someone who writes to perfect strangers asking them for advice.
Except to be, is she actually posturing for advice? She didn't. She seems like she's just looking for validation, like a confirmation. Because what was the last thing she said? She wasn't like, "Hey, I need a bunch of help."
No, it says, "Is it possible for me to find someone?"
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's I am correct. The very posturing of the question is, "I'm right."
Fair point.
Where will I find someone
that's right.
Okay, good
that
point.
Will acknowledge me?
Well, someone that will bow to my ways. Here we go. Secular says, welcome to the wonderful world of dating. While some may think of dating as a popularity contest, it's really more like sifting for a gold nugget. It takes a lot of people years to strike gold, and it's the same with dating. Is it possible to find someone? Absolutely. But it takes time, stamina, and a sense of humor to survive the process.
You could have put that on a plaque somewhere.
Yeah. Lame motivational poster.
I'm just saying, that might have let her off a little easy. Even by her description, I feel like there's something about how she's approaching these relationships that is otherwise reducing her chances of finding something that is lasting. Okay.
Dear Life in the Path, would it be okay for an 80-year-old man to take a 50-year-old woman to supper? We often talk together at church.
That's it?
That's the question.
Yes.
I made it at church.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go. Have fun.
Wait, Michaels, where would they have met that would have been unacceptable?
I don't know. At a church, it's God's blessing. It's got to be. I don't know.
What, do you work in Christian radio?
Yep.
I bought an advertisement on this station.
Yeah, you can take her out to dinner.
Yeah, what secular's answer to this one?
Hey,
yeah. I mean, unless you're married to some other 80-year-old woman, yeah, it's probably fine.
He forgot to put the, but Gladys won't know.
Hey. Do you think that this is lady number one and man number two? Like they're of the same, she's a strong-willed 50-year-old, and he's like this real impish guy who's right. Like, oh, should I, can I ask people out?
Hey, my eyesight isn't what it used to be. Can you drive me somewhere? Oh, here we go again. Mr. can't take care of himself.
Okay.
Yeah, Secular's advice was, only if she says yes. That's what Secular said.
Wow.
Solid.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks, Secular.
Let's see. No, that's not going to work. Hold on. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, My husband drives the car with his knees while shaving, drinking coffee, brushing his teeth, talking on the cell, and using one hand to steer. Knees in one hand, or that's not necessary. The knees will cover it. When I complain, he makes fun of me and says, those that can, do.
Wow.
What?
I love this guy. Here we go.
This guy's great.
I am in a shotgun passenger seat and would prefer death to be paralyzed in an accident he causes. When I see him with the coffee headed to the car, I insist on driving, but sometimes I don't catch him in time. We've been married for 30 years, and I know he loves me and isn't trying to kill me. He reads your column, so maybe you can help me get through to him.
Hmm.
It just sounds like, wow, a couple of hens this get together and pick on a guy.
This guy's a ripe candidate for natural selection.
Hey, okay. Except for he's got life mastered. Everyone else is waiting to do these things separately. He's knocking them all down at once.
Yeah, I feel like that's not fair to the man. He's still alive, isn't he? In the terms of natural selection, he's validated that what he's doing is correct.
Yeah, and the fact that they've been married 30 years, he's had ample time to reproduce. So, well,
yeah,
so
and he's keeping a solid marriage going.
That's I guess that's just evidence that God must really love this man.
Hey, he's a man among men. If you saw the same guy driving an earth mover, drinking coffee, shaving, you know what I'm saying, steering the thing, and also building half of downtown, you'd be like, that's the coolest man I've ever seen.
Hey, man, can I get your autograph on your name?
Yeah.
He's also write Greek stories about this man.
I'm telling you. He should have a statue to
let
him.
Let me draw you, sir.
What did let me draw you? What?
Oh, yeah.
I will forever be wary of Booba with a sketch pad.
Dude, it's going to come out as a stick figure. Don't worry about it.
Man, okay. Sir, that was great. Can I draw a sketch of you? In my book?
Are you chiseled out of marble?
Yes, that's what I was saying. Let me make a sculpture.
Okay, wait. Let me give you time to clarify. What did you mean by that?
Fully. Hey, do what you're doing right now, but stay right there. That way, I can draw this. There was no other connotation.
You just want a record, a pencil sketch of your own doing of that circumstance.
I want that. I want to sell that painting to people so they know.
I hope
his...
I never impress Booba.
Let me draw you.
Booba's hubris knows no bounds. He could just take a picture, but instead he wants his own rendering.
I need to take my
own. His own hand of the circumstance.
That photograph had nothing to do with me. My hands didn't do nothing for
notice
that photograph.
Notice the perspective I used and the slate pencil that I bought. This is the best drawing ever. Here we go. Did anybody have anything bad to say about this man? I mean, seriously.
I'm for it. Nah. I feel like he's got his thing under control.
Now, I'd do it if I could.
Those who can do, is that secular or Solomon? That's my question.
Those who can do.
That's sweet.
It's apocrypha.
I mean, there's a bit of hubris in there somewhere. But
book
I mean,
of second opinions.
Are you confident before the Lord? Right? You know what I'm saying? Here we go. Secular says, what your risk-loving husband is doing falls under the category of distracted driving. Eating, drinking, grooming, using a handheld cell phone are against the law in some states. Notice those four things there. That's complete. Because folks who steer with their knees and use their rearview mirror to shave, practice dental hygiene, or apply makeup have been known to cause serious accidents.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
No, I'm agreeing.
We were driving to Ames, and Herrick almost got out of the car because I was factioning a text to my wife.
Yeah.
But he was not committed enough to actually leave, just to make
stop.
A mild threat.
It says, since you haven't been able to get through to your husband, hang on to the car keys or insist that he finish with his activities before starting the ignition. And if he won't cooperate, for your own safety, get out of the car and arrange for other transportation. Okay, here's the hard part. Like, distracted driving causes a lot of accidents and bad things. Very, very bad things have happened. I feel like she may have painted a cartoonish version of this man that has, you know, six Vishnu hands and seems to be getting a bunch of stuff done at the same time.
Are you eating pancakes? Stop it.
I mean, you know, I I mean, I don't know what to say. I'm guilty of this. I've shaved while I've driven. Not like, you know, not like shaving cream and razor. You know? I mean, I don't know how you brush your teeth. I mean, as soon as you spit it out the window, it comes right back in or hits the back window. Like, you can't do that with any class. But I don't know. Just watch it.
Hey, you ever tried to change your pants?
Yep.
While you're driving?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a feat.
It is indeed.
You need some open highway and a good radio.
I've taken off my shoes. Quickly realized that I had to use the restroom and had to put my shoes on all while driving. I did not stop and then put my shoes on. I was trying to put
Why
them back on.
Why did you take your
driving.
Shoes off to go to the restroom?
I took them off because I was driving a really long way and my shoes were really uncomfortable. And then when I was driving...
Why did you buy uncomfortable shoes?
Because there's not really that many options for me, man.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
There you go.
She's life. Keep the shoes on, man.
Okay, here we go. Last one.
Those who can do.
Yep. Shoes off, shoes on, bathroom, shoes back off.
Dear Life from the Path, neither of my parents do anything for fun. When Dad comes home from work, he either reads the newspaper or takes a nap. If Mom has free time after finishing the housework or running errands, she watches the news on TV or goes to bed early. I never thought it was unusual because it had been this way since I was growing up. But once I was in high school, I started hearing classmates talk about their parents' friends or hobbies, and I realized my parents are different. They don't even listen to music or read books. When I want to go out with my friends, my parents act annoyed and wonder why I don't want to go out instead of staying at home. Are there other people out there like this, or are my folks unusual? Here's the deal. Your parents are annoyed because now they have to worry about you, and they're used to not doing much. They want to put a whole lot of time into this thing.
Are you saying, are there people out there that read the newspaper? I feel like it's been going strong for a while, so I'm going to say yes, there are. They're not catering to the one person that's reading the newspaper and still putting out thousands of issues. Here's the deal. You and your parents have two different ideas of fun. You think one thing is fun because you're in high school. They think one thing is fun because they're adults and have had time to formulate that as their fun. Leave them alone. They're having fun.
This is hard for people to understand. It's hard for me to get, is looking at people as being different than you. You know what I'm saying? Like, some people get rejuvenated by quiet time. Some people get rejuvenated by being around other people and being filled with action or other things going on or having activities. Like, it increases their, you know, their fulfillment. And like, you just have to realize what camp you sit in and what camp the people around you sit in, and do your best to try to respect that. You know, like, I have a hard time with a lot of people because they get refilled by being around other people, and that's not me. I get refilled by being by myself. And so sometimes it makes it very hard for, say, you know, for us as a team to come up with something to do or ways to interact. But I think if you can look at it as a bigger perspective, then, you know, I just leave your parents alone. They're not causing you any trouble. Seriously.
Yeah. You're a teenager, apparently. So your parents are, yes, weird, but so are all your friends' parents. They're weird, too. They're just weird in different ways.
Yeah.
Right. And if you have both parents at home and you apparently have a decent relationship enough to talk with them and want to hang out with them, I mean, you won the lottery compared to most of the kids in high school these days when it comes to parents. Most kids don't even... You know, they definitely don't have both parents at home, and if they do, it's probably not a good relationship.
That's true. It's not like they're trying to make you stay home. Right. They just don't understand your decision. Why would you want to go out? We got the newspaper. We got the dog here. I feel like there's no reason to leave.
Have you seen the news recently? It's great.
Yeah, I mean, there's a distinction as to whether, like, the things that they're doing because they're unhealthy, or those are just the things they enjoy doing. And I think that's probably the distinction. If they seem to enjoy them. I mean, I don't like to bake. Some people like to bake. Some people, like, there are things that people consider fun that I consider work. And I don't want anything to do with, you know, but if they seem to enjoy themselves, yeah, there just isn't any reason to have a big deal about it.
Yeah, that's actually true. It's not like I turn on the TV halfway through the day and find that gal that, you know, shows people how to cook, and I'm like, oh, this is disgusting. Yeah. How would anyone waste their life like this?
Yeah, stop baking that turkey and go out.
That's right. Here's what Secular says. Secular says, at the end of a busy day, many people want to simply unwind rather than look for things to do. Reading the newspaper, napping, or watching the television news are some of the ways they do that. While your parents may be more introverted than those of your classmates, I don't think they are particularly unusual. The question you should ask yourself is their relationship working for them? And if the answer is yes, be glad. What's natural for some families isn't for everyone, and neither is the idea of what's fun.
You have been listening to Live from the Path. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We talked about some big questions for God. We played Secular versus Solomon, which Mike unnaturally dominated with the firm Irish answer.
Hoo-ah!
And took the cake. We also gave out some advice on Dear Live from the Path. Look, take the old lady out to dinner. Stay home if you want to. That's the basic nature of the advice. And if you're a dominating woman who always finds a pansy man and is upset about it, quit looking for pansy men. We're going to have to let you go. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Go to lifefrompath.org. You can check out past clips from the shows. That includes the performance. Hey, I remastered one of the I Surrender All, Never Once by Chandler Produce and Jordan Tramer when they were in here. I love that song. They did a great job with that. Go check that out. And yeah, that's all we got going on. Big thanks to Ben Michaels for coming in. Thanks, Ben. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path.